This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. City Temple Church, not to be confused with the much older Temple Church nearby, stands within the boundaries of the City of London but doesn't ever get grouped with the other city churches. But for this series, I decided to find out why and to include it, and I'm really glad I did. So I used to pass the building nearly every day when I used to work on Fleet Street. So it was great to at last find out more. And I met the minister, Reverend Dr. Rodney Woods, in one of the many rooms high up in the building. And from him, I learned about this historically interesting church with an unusual interior, including an old cinema space, and a polyethnic congregation. This is, after all, a congregationalist and nonconformist church. To understand what all this means, listen on.
Well, we like to describe City Temple as one of the new churches in the City of London, because we were only founded in 1640. So not very long. Yeah, not very long. Well, compared to St. Andrew's that's next to us, there was a church there around 1100, and St. Paul's 606. City Temple might have existed prior to that, but until 1640 it was illegal to be a nonconformist in the City of London. And in fact, in 1566, there's a record of the city sheriffs breaking into a church meeting and arresting a number of nonconformists. And that's because they found a membership roll and some church records. So churches didn't really keep a lot of records after that. But in 1640, with Cromwell, it suddenly became legal to have a congregation, a nonconformist congregation in London.
And was it called City Temple Church then?
No, the church was always known by the place where it met. So the first place it met was a meeting house on Anchor Lane. And basically what they did, as I understand it, in the day in a meeting house, all the houses were built very close together. And so basically they'd go to the upper floors of a couple of houses that were connected and break through the walls and create a place to meet as a church. So the church moved around. It was always in the City of London. It's always been in the City of London. But moved around until it located on this site in 1874 was when the first iteration of the building on this site was finished and opened. And at that stage, it was renamed officially City Temple.
So that's when it's got its name.
Now, when Joseph Parker came about 1868 or so, he said as part of his desire when they called him was he wanted to rename the church, and City Temple was the name that he had chosen. And so when they moved to this location, that seemed the right name.
Do you know why Joseph Parker decided to build such a grand building here?
Oh yeah, well actually City Temple had a very large building prior to this.
Okay.
We were located down at number one Poultry, just across from the Bank of England. And I don't know if it was known as the Midland Bank at that time, but it's where the former Midland Bank building is, and there's still a Midland Bank plaque. But it was in a bit of a back alley there, and it was dark, but the church was outgrowing the facility, and the bank wanted to buy it.
Right.
And so the corporation had just built the Holborn Viaduct, this bridge. And so they offered City Temple the property, freehold in perpetuity, for Christian worship. And so that's why they decided then to move and build the building here. And with the initial building, when Parker dedicated the building, he wanted it to be here, which is kind of a highway connecting the city with Westminster. And so when he dedicated the building, the first building on this site, he wanted it to be a place that would always have a place where people could come aside and pray.
It was called City Temple Church, and you mentioned a man called Joseph Parker. Can you tell me who he was?
The church has been served by a fairly long stream of reasonably significant ministers. First was Thomas Goodwin, who was the chaplain to Oliver Cromwell and one of the framers of the Westminster Confession of Faith, Westminster documents, which are the foundation for Presbyterianism in Scotland now. There's a key guy named John Clayton that served in the early 1800s for about 40, 45 years. And then they really wanted to make sure that they brought in a significant preacher, because City Temple has always been known for its preaching. And so they discovered this preacher up in Manchester who was very popular, named Joseph Parker, and they invited him to come down. And so he became minister in 1868 and brought in a number of innovations. He started a midweek service for business people, which we think was probably the first in the city, if not in London, that was designed as over lunchtime. He would draw small groups of 1,000 to 2,000 people on a Wednesday or a Thursday. So Parker really was a significant influence in building up the influence of the church. And so City Temple in the 1800s was actually known as the Cathedral of Nonconformity. So it was probably the most significant nonconformist church, certainly in London, if not in the United Kingdom. At the time. So I always tell people there's actually two cathedrals in London, in the city. St. Paul's is one, and then there's City Temple. You know, but I don't let people call me the bishop. We avoid that.
So when people come into the church, would they feel it's like a cathedral?
No, in terms of cathedral, the idea behind a cathedral was not so much this big spacious place of worship. But a cathedral was a place where usually it was a gathered ministry. And City Temple has always been a gathered church. We've never been a parish church. People have always come from distances, to even today, to worship at City Temple. Cathedrals were also places where there was a real emphasis on prayer. So oftentimes they had would have monks or others that were dedicated to doing prayer fairly consistently. And City Temple, since we've been on this site, we've always been a place for prayer. And even now we've started what we call the City of London House of Prayer, where eventually we'd like to have prayer going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So in terms of cathedrals, you know, we do have to change what we think of in terms of cathedrals to understand what they really were historically, which wasn't just a big building. It was more about the influence that a particular central church would have. So in that sense, City Temple was the Cathedral of Nonconformity. Not in terms of, you know, you come in and you have to be quiet and you're going to see all kinds of statues and things like that.
But what will people see when they come in? Because actually, I know, you know, it's not about the architecture necessarily and it's not about the look of the place, but it is actually quite a big church. And it's actually quite an impressive front. And
it is indeed.
It's a lovely Victorian building, I suppose. So how would you describe it so they know what to expect when they were to walk in?
Well, most people, when they come in, they will go into our prayer room, which is just off the sanctuary. So it's coming. You come in the lobby, and it's on the right hand side, and that's what's open during the week
for people to come into.
It's a separate room.
And does it look like a church? Does it just look like a room like this?
It's probably one of only two places in the building that has stained glass.
Okay.
So the other being the stained glass window in the sanctuary. So when people come into the sanctuary, it really all depends on
the sanctuary being the main body of the church,
the main room for worship. The building that was built on this site originally was built as a nonconformist after that design, but then around 1940-41 the Germans decided that we should remodel the building, and so they helped with the demolition at the time, and so it was rebuilt and finished in 1958 under the ministry of a Methodist who was the minister here at the time, named Leslie Weatherhead. And unfortunately, when he redesigned the sanctuary, he redesigned it as a Methodist sanctuary There's two pulpits at the front. One would have been the lectern, one for the preaching of the word. There were extensive choir stalls, and then the table has gone from being in the midst of the people to being back against the wall under the cross, more in the form of an altar rather than a table. And the table is symbolic of Jesus in our midst. Yeah. And we sit down with Jesus at table like friends gathering together for a meal. And that's happens with the Lord's Supper.
So for people who are in tune with, you know, how churches are laid out, they might come in here and think, oh, this looks more like a Methodist setup.
They certainly would, yeah. If somebody really understood church architecture, they would come in and they'd say, this is Methodist.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In fact, when I first came, I thought, this is crazy. Why we're not a Methodist church. We're not Anglican. Mm. And it was always my intention initially to move the table that's under the cross forward, but that table weighs about 400 pounds. And so we quickly abandoned that idea. You know, but one day we're hoping and possibly redeveloping this building yet again, because it's, you know, it was built very, very well. It finished 1958, but it has all those fine 1958 things, like an antique lift, the electrics, the plumbing's 1950s, and so it all needs to be updated within the building. And one of our primary goals in that redevelopment will be to restore this as a nonconformist chapel, so that when people come in, they recognize better the heritage and history of the church than what they would see now as they come in. And so for us, that's why the features don't really feature very much. City Temple hasn't had a choir for 40 years, and so the choir pews at the front are used as storage. The lectern at the front is used as storage. So really now for at least 30 years, 40 years maybe, the church has not used the sanctuary as it was originally designed to be used.
Yeah, okay, that's great. When I worked down the road, I'd come in here and give blood. And my first impression when I came in here, this is 15 years ago or something, was that it felt like a school hall.
Yeah.
In a way, that was my first impression.
The blood donation happened down in a space we call the lower hall.
Oh, that was somewhere else.
And when this building was built, it was really quite innovative. So the lower hall initially was designed to be a professional quality cinema and theater. Oh. So we had a projection room that had state-of-the-art projection equipment to show films. We had green rooms for actors to dress. There's stage lighting. There's an orchestra pit that's there. It was also designed so it could be used for sports, volleyball, and different things like that. So it was extremely innovative. But then beginning in the 1970s, as people started moving out of the city and out of central London, the congregation just continued to decline. So by the 1970s, it was down to a couple hundred people, perhaps. And so they had to start hiring out parts of the building to generate revenue to fund it all. And during that time, I think it was KPMG that used it for their staff canteen for a time. And so at that time, they closed off the gallery. They took out all the projection equipment. And so that's why it feels like a school hall, because it would be very similar to a school hall, unfortunately.
This is a non-conformist church and a congregationalist church. Can you just break down, what's non-conformist?
The non-conformists were those who said, we will not conform to the prayer book of the Church of England. So it really started in the 1500s, after Henry VIII, and the institution of a common prayer book.
Yeah.
And the non-conformists said, no, we don't want a bishop telling us how to pray. We don't want somebody telling us what we need to preach on. We don't want a lectionary that says you need to preach on this passage of the Bible on this particular day. We want to be able to worship God according to the Bible and according to our own conscience. And so that was the heart of nonconformity.
Rebels.
A little bit. And then the Congregationalists, yeah, that really came to prominence again in the 1600s, around when Cromwell was in power. He brought together a group of what was called the Westminster Divines, and so it was around 1649, I believe. But but he said, "Okay, guys, come up with a common theology and a way of doing church." And so they met together, and they decided that a church should be governed by a group of elders rather than just an independent minister or bishop or something like that. And the elders should have the freedom to choose the minister. But then there were a few people, like Thomas Goodwin, that said, no, we don't like this idea that you might have a small group of self-perpetuating elders governing the church. They said, it really seems to us that the church members themselves should have the ability to choose their elders and choose their minister.
Yeah.
And so that was the heart of the idea behind Congregationalism. And City Temple, we're not a large church in terms of numbers, but we're an incredibly diverse church. We have a vision that we call our polycultural vision, which is, it takes these different cultures, and not only do we respect the cultures, but we also want to learn from one another. So we are intentionally blending cultures together, learning from each other, growing together. So at City Temple, we have no majority ethnic group. And it's a challenge sometimes, because a lot of people, when they go to church, they want to go to a church with people just like them. Not only their cultural background, but oftentimes their socioeconomic background. And so City Temple is blended culturally, we're blended socioeconomically, we're blended generationally. And that's very intentional for us. It can be a challenge to build relationships. In some churches, if everybody's monocultural, normally you can get pretty deep in your relationships within a month or two. But oftentimes with City Temple, to grow deep in relationships, it might take you a year to really invest yourself in that. But for us, we want a church that really reflects London.
And it sounds like you've come from far away, because that's not a London accent,
I hear. Oh, it's a West London accent. Yeah, about 4,000 miles west.
So from the States.
Yeah, I am from the colonies, indeed. Yeah. And in fact, the City Temple has a long tradition with the colonies. I think it was our second recorded minister was educated at some little theological college called Harvard. Harvard and back in the days. So back in time of, say, Joseph Parker, he was so popular amongst Americans that the top part of the gallery was called the Rocky Mountains. And it was called the Rocky Mountains because it was so high, it was so far away from the pulpit, and it was so filled with Americans. So there's a lot of connection there historically.
And there's still quite a few Americans.
We try to keep Americans out.
Oh.
We let a few in from time to time, but we don't want them to spoil the mix.
No, that's true. I don't believe you.
They have a habit of taking over,
and running the place.
Running the place, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Now, my last question is about this being a city church. Do you feel like this is a city church? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And we're definitely not a city church.
Why?
Well, for the most part, for much of our history, until 1803, 1804, for example, if you were part of City Temple, you could not be a member of Parliament. You could not go to Oxford or Cambridge. You know, because they were nonconformists were excluded from that. And so until the laws were changed in the early 1800s, it was very difficult. And in many cases, if you worked in the city, if you were a nonconformist, you were destroying your job prospects. And then in the 1800s, after the law changed, it became more fashionable for people to step out of the Church of England and to come into a nonconformist church like City Temple. You know, most city churches today, you go in and many of the people in those churches represent pretty much a white middle-class English background.
But it's interesting because as I've been around, there are a growing number of churches that I've been into which are more about the preaching.
Yeah.
And I feel like what you described in that respect, there are other churches in the city which have the same emphasis.
But it's all the people. A lot of the people that are drawn in. You know, for example, I know another church that we both know, in terms of the people who come to that church, is very multicultural. I mean, they have people from, you know, 10, 15 different nations, different skin tones and everything. We looked at the webpage for that church. Every one of their leaders was white, middle-class English. Every single one. And they had a lot of leaders. Contrast that here to City Temple. One of our elders is Nigerian. Another one of our elders is Canadian, who's married to a Korean gal. Another one of our elders is Burmese. Our leadership reflects the diversity that's in our congregation. And that is really not very much done in any of the city churches that we've encountered. So for us as a church, we really see ourselves as countercultural to the city historically. And so that's why we would say we're not typically a city church. Now, on the contrast to that, City Temple has made a historic commitment to be in the city of London. And we have reaffirmed that commitment. We reaffirmed that when the building was bombed in the war. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were saying, hey, go out to the suburbs. Everybody's moving out to the suburbs. The church will thrive better there. And that would have been true. But we said, no, we've always been in the city. We're committed to the city. Our roots are in the city. And we're for the city, but we're not necessarily of the city.
Hopefully, Reverend Rodney has clarified what a city church does and doesn't look like. For me, the mystery was somewhat solved during the making of this podcast, along with learning about a lesser appreciated and understood place of worship within the square mile.